All right, welcome to See You at the Show. This is Eric Schacht. I'm here with Linda Evans. We are doing our third show in COVID seclusion, but we're still bringing you great local theater content. How are you doing today, Linda?
Great. The sun is shining today, and I'm inside my home, sheltering with my family. So I guess we're all good.
And we're especially good today because we have a special, actually the first ever hour-long edition of See You at the Show. Because we've got some amazing special content this week.
Yes, it's something that's really close to my heart. We have Kenny Chumbly with us.
So Kenny, to properly introduce you, you are the author of Goblins and the Gravedigger. What is this play that you've written?
In 2017, I helped Rod Sickler do A Christmas Carol. And I knew Dickens had written several Christmas books besides A Christmas Carol. And so I decided to research his Christmas stories and then do a retelling of one of them. I decided to retell the story of the goblins who stole the sexton. We really don't know when he wrote this story. He was probably about 20 years old when he wrote it. We don't know why he wrote it. But when he agreed to write the Pickwick Papers, he committed himself to delivering a certain amount of cop every month. The Pickwick Papers were serialized in the magazine, and he had to send in so many words, so many pages each month. And some months, when he was lazy, he would take a story he had already written and finesse it into the very loose plot of the Pickwick Papers. And the story of the goblins who stole the sexton was one of those little stories he stuck in to save him some time. And what I found is that this was the prototypical Scrooge story. Instead of Scrooge, there is Gabriel Grubb. Instead of ghost, there are goblins. Both stories take place on Christmas Eve. Both stories involve the redemption of a wretched old man. I created a backstory utilizing Dickens' characters and Dickensian themes from other stories. Got the book that came out printed by Adelaide Books last May, New York City. I've got the radio play script. I've got this two-act play script. And of all of it, I'm most excited about the two-act play script that we plan to bring to stage this December in Urbana.
My involvement with Goblins and the Gravedigger was you got together a group of local actors and talent in town. We recorded the radio play version of it.
The last day of 2018, I was contacted by a colleague, a theatrical colleague in Ireland, who had been asked to come up with a 50-minute radio play for Irish radio. And she had read the early manuscript of my Goblins play and thought this would be a great story to adapt into a radio play. And so I spent several months paring down the two-act stage play of the Goblins to a 50-minute radio play. And great people were brought into this, and we recorded the show a year ago in April. And then we did four live presentations of the show last December, two in Rantoul, two in Champagne. If a person likes A Christmas Carol, they're going to love The Goblins of the Gravedigger. Same story, but different. Familiar, but fresh. So we've all had a great time working on this project.
Yeah, it was definitely, I mean, it was a wonderful labor of love to have you there, you know, since you wrote it and you knew what you wanted, and to have Roger Francisco, who was doing the audio, and Rodney and Lucinda. It was just a really magical way of getting everybody together and working together, and all the local talent that came in and recorded their voices. And it was a lot of fun, and it's neat to see how it's progressing, and it'll be great to see the show in December.
Yeah, I'm a complete layman to this. I had no experience in theater, no experience in anything like this before. But the family that I have now, because of people I've met who have been in my shows, I've worked with now, it has been the greatest fallout of this whole process. Not my show, not Dickens, but the people I've met. And I wouldn't exchange that experience for anything.
Well, I know that WEFT and See You at the Show are ecstatic to be able to bring to the community who is so, or which is so starved right now of theatrical experiences. We're so excited to be able to bring, I guess, the worldwide radio debut of Goblins and the Gravedigger to Champaign-Urbana community and worldwide, streaming online at WFT.org. So, Kenny, we are very appreciative of this. I know that we hear from our listeners a lot that they are craving original content. They're craving theatrical experience from home during this phase. So your generosity and contribution is so appreciated.
Oh, I'm glad to be a part of this, Eric. And the only other thing I would say is that I heard from the Dickensian group out in San Francisco, puts on the Dickens Fair every year, December, the largest gathering of its kind in the world of all things Dickens. And they wrote to tell me, so far as they know, no one has ever done with the Goblins and the Gravedigger what I've done with it. So this really is sort of a unique, singular sort of presentation, and I hope everyone enjoys it who listens to it.
Well, it's a magnificent piece of art. You should be really proud of it. I'm excited to see where things go this fall with the two-act production and actually, you know, getting to see the words actually come to life, because it's always just been in radio form until now.
Yes. And can I just say that we'll be doing more advertising and promotion, of course, of the stage show. It's going to be a spectacular. I want this to be the best thing that's hit this community in a long time. And I hope I'm not speaking out of school to say that Linda is going to be directing. In my book, there's no one who exceeds Linda in knowledge, skill, intuition, and she is the perfect person to bring this to life. And I couldn't be more excited. And the virus is going to be over. We're going to have plenty of time to put this on. And I'm really looking forward to this December and the staging of the Goblins.
And Linda's going to beg me to edit that out.
I couldn't be happy. I wouldn't be doing this if Linda had not agreed to be part of it.
Yeah.
Did I say that just like you wrote it, Linda?
She never would have written that. You said it just like I wrote it. So, you definitely have Kenny, you have a partner in See You at the Show for bringing the excitement and publicity, and you know, we'll have you and your cast and your crew and everybody on the air as much as you want to, because it is going to be a spectacular event, and we'll help.
So on with the show, we should probably air the original cast of the Goblins and the Gravedigger.
Yes, Eric, thank you so much.
10 seconds to air.
Thank you.
Thank you.
In 5, 4, 3, 2.
Recorded at the Roof Ran Production Studio near Champaign, Illinois, the Prairie Theatrical Ensemble presents The Goblins and the Gravedigger, being a retelling of Charles Dickens' first Christmas tale, as told and adapted for radio by Kenny Chumley. And now, The Goblins and the Gravedigger.
Call everyone together. We've a visit to make.
To whom?
Oh, wretched soul.
Can he be saved?
I don't know. We may be too late.
Then why bother?
Because it's Christmas, and we've a gift for him.
A gift? What is it?
A chance. A final chance.
Hello, old chap. Welcome.
Welcome, Mr. Pickwick.
It's a frightful night to be out,
Were it not for the good fellowship I expect to enjoy this evening, I'd be home.
Snows, does it, Mr. Pickwick?
I should say it does, Wardle. It's an old English blizzard we're having. A real storm. It's nights like this that make the fireside warmer when you sit near it, and the summer greener as you think of it.
What's that? What did he say? There's nothing the matter, is there?
No, Mother. Mr. Pickwick was just saying rough weather's afoot. Heavy snow, frightful cold. I can't ever remember a Christmas Eve this wintry.
Well, I can. This is just like the Christmas Eve the goblins carried off Gabriel Grubb.
Who? What? Goblins?
It's nothing, Mr. Pickwick. Just a silly story folks around here used to tell about a church sexton, a gravedigger, who was snatched by goblins.
Silly? There's no silliness to it. People here are far too sensible for silliness.
Now, Mother, don't be grouchy.
Then don't say it's nonsense when it's not.
The story about the goblins and the gravedigger is true, Mr. Pickwick. And that's the end of it.
No, that's not the end. That's the start. I'd like to hear this story. I believe we all would like to hear it.
Oh, all right. Libations all around and everyone find a perch. I suppose this is as good a night as any for a fairy tale.
Christmas tale?
Yes, Mother. As good a night as any for a Christmas tale. So, is everyone ready? I see you nodding yes. Good. Well, ever so long ago, when our great-grandfathers lived and believed it...
Which, quite frankly, means it's true.
Yes, Mother. When our great-grandfathers lived and believed it was true, there occurred a most curious thing. It was Christmas Eve, and at the village church, Ben, a poor boy whose only family was his widowed mother, was sweeping the sanctuary. The curate had promised him a penny if he would tidy up and ready the sanctuary for Christmas services the next morning. Two deacons, typical ecclesiastics who smelled of phylacteries, were on their way to the church for a meeting with the sexton.
Deck the halls with boughs of holly, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Tis the season to be jolly.
My word, Deacon. Look who's here. Merry Christmas, Ben.
Merry Christmas, Deacons.
Aren't you in a festive mood?
I'm always in a good mood at Christmas, sir. And I try to be extra happy, for me mother.
What do you mean?
Well, we lost Father 3 Christmases ago.
Ah, I remember. Yes.
And Christmas ain't been the same since, especially for Mother. But I've an idea that might change that. The curate's promised me a copper if I'd sweep up, and I'm going to buy some plums, hoping that when Mother sees them, she'll make a pudding and forget her sadness, if just for a while.
A capital idea, son. Good for you.
Say, we're expecting the sexton any moment. When he arrives, would you tell him we're in our office?
For sure I will. Merry Christmas to you, and many of them. Don we now our gay apparel, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la.
It's always been a mystery to me how a saint like Brother Grubb could sire a ne'er-do-well son like Gabriel.
Agreed. Brother Grubb was such a divine, twice to church on Sunday, sometimes thrice. No one sang louder or prayed longer.
Or had a son more surly or cross-grained. Gabriel Grubb's look could sour milk. I'd rather be doing anything today than having him fasten his squinty eyes on me.
Agreed, but there's no avoiding it.
'Twas a shame Brother Grubb died before his 70.
Do you remember the particulars?
Seems it was an accident, at home, and on Christmas Eve, if memory serves.
'Tis the season to be jolly, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la.
Stop your caterwauling, boy, before I stop it for you.
Gabriel Grubb. A man with a long nose, a long chin, scraggly hair, and no smile, the church sexton, had arrived.
But it's Christmas Eve, Mr. Grubb.
It's gall and wormwood's what it is.
Merry Christmas anyway, sir. The deacons are waiting in their office.
Claude's wasting me time.
Ah, sexton. So nice of you to drop by.
I didn't drop by. I were told to be here.
Yes, well...
What's this about?
Well, as you know, this time each year, it's customary for the deacons to distribute gifts of appreciation to the church help.
So?
So, it's with regret that we must inform you there will be no gift for you this year.
What I just hear? I's getting no money. And why is that? I know for a fact the church baskets have been brimming over as of late.
Money's not the problem.
Then what is?
The problem, Sexton,
is you.
I? You're saying I's the problem?
There have been complaints.
Parishioners are upset. They claim it's always a jolt and a jar when they must deal with you to arrange a funeral. You're perceived as being ill-mannered, intimidating, and insulting.
So?
The complaints merit action. But out of respect to your sainted father, we're allowing you to retain your position.
Me father? A saint?
Do remember, there's a grave that needs to be dug.
I don't need your reminding.
I think we're finished here. Have you anything to add?
I does. Your asses, both of ye.
Mr. Grubb.
On my word. Such impudence.
Yes, Deacon, but we must tread lightly here. Good grave diggers are hard to find.
Grubb, as you can imagine, left in an ugly mood. When he reached his home, a fusty, fogyish shanty, he found his flask and was soon imbibing. By late afternoon, his disposition, fanned by drink, was as dark as the gathering gloom.
I might as well take that blasted grave. Where's me flask?
Collecting his spade, lantern, and liquor, Gabriel Grubb headed for the road to the graveyard, known as Coffin Lane. Night was heavy, and snow had started to fall as Grubb stumbled out. His trek to the cemetery sorely tempted his diminished soul, for he was surrounded by Christmas life, the sound of sleigh bells, the glad light of fireplaces reflected through frosted windows, the shouts of neighbors wishing each other Merry Christmas, the aromas of geese being stuffed and pudding being boiled, all of which made him hiss like a green log thrown on the fire. He would have been happier to have seen children sick with fever, or measles, or croup, or whooping cough. For in those cases, there was always the chance his professional services might be needed. Despite the numerous irritations, he scuttled on, heading for Coffin Lane.
In excelsis Deo gloria.
At the very time Grubb was heading out, young Ben was heading home with the plums he'd bought.
Who's making that infernal noise? Ah, I might have guessed. It's the rook that were a torment to me earlier. You, boy, come here.
Yes? Oh, hello, Mr. Grubb. Merry Christmas again. I'm on my way home with some plums, hoping me mother will make a puddin'.
Plum puddin', you say?
Yes, sir.
Ben's joy was more than Grubb could bear. In an instant, the bitterness within him rose like a mist of malignity that bordered on madness. Rage, like love and fortune, blinds, and Grubb could no more see the depravity in what he did next than he could see the backside of the north wind. Swiftly, unconsciously, his fury welled into a vicious blow delivered to the side of Ben's head. A second battery followed the first, dropping Ben to the ground.
Whatever I did, I'm sorry.
Don't ever get Christmassy around me again, you hear?
I won't, sir.
With his senseless rage momentarily sated, Grubb continued happily on his way, leaving Ben beaten and sobbing in the snow. Before continuing, might anyone need a spot of tea or some bread pudding?
Not now, man. Your story enchants us.
Yes.
Onward!
Well then, as it seems no pause in the tale is needed, I shall do as you wish and continue. By the time he reached the graveyard, the night was dark, the wind was stirring, and snow was falling.
It's getting colder. Blast it! Where'd I put me flask? Ah, here it is. just what the doctor ordered. Brave lodging for one. Brave lodgings for one. A hole in the cold earth when life is done. A stone at the head, a stone at the feet. A right juicy meal for the worms to eat. Ha! There's a thought. A Christmas funeral. They should tie a red bow around the coffin. Oh, oh, oh.
Ho, ho, ho!
What? Who's that? Is someone there? No? It must have been an echo.
It was not.
There he is! Hunt him!
Suddenly, Grubbs saw, maybe just felt, a dark shadow flit by, and the starch started ebbing from his spine.
Who's there?
Turn around and you'll see.
When Grubb turned, what he saw made his blood run cold. For seated upon a tombstone was a strange specter. His long legs were crossed in a quaint fashion, and his hands rested upon his knees. He wore a bright green, close-fitting garment trimmed in gold brocade. A short cloak dangled from his back. On his head was a pointed hat, the kind known as a sugarloaf, garnished with a long feather. His shoes curled at the toes, and he looked as if he'd been sitting there comfortably for 200 or 300 years. It was a goblin. The shock to Grubb's nerves was so sharp it gave him a jerk that nearly threw him off balance. It was all he could do to regather his courage enough to speak.
Who are you?
A neighbor. A good neighbor. Oh, spit it out, man. You sound like a horse. Yes, neighbor. What brings you here this night?
A grave, sir. I was here to dig a grave.
Who makes graves when others make merry?
Get her up.
What's in the flask, gravedigger?
Brandy?
Are you drunk?
To me knees, maybe, but no higher.
Who drinks on a night like this?
Gabriel Grubb!
Whom do we claim as our fair and lawful prize?
Gabriel Grubb!
You have anything to say, gravedigger?
It's very curious, sir. But it could be the spirits I seeing are from the spirits I drinking.
At this, the goblin gave Grubb a kick that bowled him over.
Has anything from a bottle ever given you a kick like that, gravedigger?
Oh.
Who thinks what he's seeing comes from a bottle?
Gabriel Grubb!
My friends seem to know you, gravedigger. They seem to know you well.
Oh, begging pardon, sir, but I don't know how they'd know me. We've never been introduced. And even if we had, what gives you the right to question me business?
Right? You ask me about rights? What gave you the right to beat a poor boy on Christmas Eve? How dare you challenge my right to question your wrong?
I was afraid I must be going.
Going? The gravedigger says he must be going. Ho, ho, ho!
Suddenly, the wind cut loose, the light from the church flashed a pale yellow, and the organ whirled out unearthly music. Around Grubb, there suddenly appeared a gob of goblins. They capered, they reeled, they skirled, leapfrogging over tombs and one another.
The only place you're going, gravedigger, is with us!
Before Grubb could escape, the goblin grabbed his collar, and the two of them sank into the earth. In the rapidity of the descent, Grubb lost his breath. When he caught it, he found himself in a large subterranean hall, such as the old legends associated with dwarves. The lighting was neither black night nor bright noon, but more like twilight, when shadows that have been prisoned up all day are released. Around him were goblins. Before him, sitting on a throne carved from a large rock, was the goblin with whom he'd been speaking. Grub's fear had now multiplied 6 times larger than it was on the surface.
Welcome to our humble home, Gravedigger. My, but it's cold enough to take the skin off your face. Bring me something sizzling.
Here you are, sire.
What was handed the goblin was a clear goblet filled with what looked like liquid fire. As the goblin drained the cup, a red-hot glow could be seen descending his throat.
Ah, that makes me feel balmy inside. A bumper for our guest.
Thank you, but I was not in the habit of taking anything warm at night.
Then you need a new habit. If he won't drink it, pin him to the ground and pour it down his throat.
No, I don't want.
Seeing Grub's reaction to the fiery froth caused the entire assemblage to break out in laughter.
Do you know why we brought you here, Gravedigger?
Because you're trolls, the lot of ye.
Trolls? I assure you, we're not trolls. I'll admit we're romps. I'll even admit we can be naughty.
We might spill your milk or tap on your windows.
Or hide your sheep.
Or untie your water bucket and let it fall down the well.
But we're not even our stepmother's half-brother's third cousin to trolls. We dread those misfits as much as you do. So, guess again, why do you think we brought you here?
To rob me of me life, I wager.
No, I told you, we're not trolls. You are an abysmal guesser, Gravedigger, so I'll answer the question myself. You're here because it's Christmas, and we've a gift for you.
A gift?
Is that an echo?
Echo.
Yes, a gift.
What kind of gift?
One you desperately need.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, then let me explain. I've been on your scent for some time, and I have learned 2 things about you. First, your heart is hollow. There's no holy of holies in you.
Bah!
Second, you have a story no one who knows you has read. But I've read it and pity you. And because I do, I've a gift for you. The gift of hope.
You're daft.
I doubt you've thought much about how wretched you are. But you will tonight. The boys and I will see to that.
You're beyond daft.
You're tempting me to leave you to your fate, but I shall resist the temptation. So, what have we for this pathetic man, boys?
The book!
Ah, yes. The book. Bring it.
Gabriel Grubb, who had never sought compassion or comfort from any living creature, had no interest in gifts. But the goblins were not about to let him ignore the gift they had for him. At the goblins' command, the assembly parted, and a small, officious-acting goblin walked in, carrying an oversized book. Grub could only look on, utterly bewildered.
Here it is, Gravedigger. A one-of-a-kind, hot-off-the-press, first-edition, copyright-pending book with your name on it.
You can keep it.
But it's not our book, Gravedigger. It's yours. See? It says Gabriel Grub right here on the cover.
I ain't no reader.
Not a problem, because you don't read this book. It's an enchanted book that functions like a mirror. You don't look at a mirror to see the mirror. You look at a mirror to see yourself. And this book, just like a mirror, will reveal yourself to yourself in only 3 pages.
Bah!
Why only 3 pages, you ask? Well, every book has but 3 parts, a beginning, an ending, and an in-between. In every life, like every book, has the same 3 parts. Thus, your book has a page for your past, your present, and your passing. I'll venture you weren't expecting such a treasure like this for Christmas.
I'll venture I was reporting you to the sheriff for kidnapping.
Oh, Gravedigger, you're going to see yourself for who you are, whether you want to or not. And we'll start with your past, not because it can be bent out of its eternal shape, but because what you are now is tied to what happened to you then. Show him the page from his past, And if he won't look, squeeze his head till his eyes pop out.
Hang him.
Make him look.
Off with his head!
As anticipated, Grub refused to look. The goblin nodded, and a large goblin stepped forward, grabbed the back of Grub's head, and shoved it down until his eyes were on the page.
What is it you see, Gravedigger?
A drawing of me as a boy and me father.
You sound alarmed. Why would the sight of you and your father distress you?
What Grub saw was a drawing of an older man, angular, long-faced, stern-looking, sitting in a Queen Anne chair and reading from a large Bible he held on his lap. A boy of about 8 was in front of the fireplace, playing with his wooden soldiers. As Grub looked on, the picture suddenly came to life.
Behold, the Lord cometh with 10,000 of his saints to execute judgment upon all.
Hey, two!
Hello? What was that?
Nothing, Father.
Nothing?
I only sneezed, Father.
Sneezed, you say? Then why did you say it was nothing? A sneeze is something, is it not? Why did you say nothing happened when something did happen?
Please, Father. Please, Father. I'm sorry.
Stop your sniveling, you worthless cob.
In public, may old man with a picture of piety spoke of God, read his Bible, church going, things that have the ring of the devout about him. But for all his religion, he weren't the better for it. You never knew when he'd rage. Anything could set him off. Nothing could set him off. He never needed cause to beat me. Why are you showing me these things, forcing me down paths I don't want to go?
Why? Because you're walking the same path as your father.
I ain't.
You are! There's more on the page. Look again.
Grub did, and saw another drawing on the page. It was the same room as before, but now a sparsely adorned Christmas tree stood in the corner, and some cheap holiday decorations adorned the mantel. But he saw something else. His mother and father arguing. Once again, the drawing came to life.
Please, dear, let go of my arm. You're hurting me. I won't mention it again. I was just saying it would help if...
You're right, woman. You'll not mention it again.
Mother! What have you done to her?
Get out, boy. This doesn't concern you.
You're wrong. It does concern me.
Put the poker down and get out.
No.
I told you to leave.
I'm not.
I said put it down.
When Gabriel's father stepped back to put distance between himself and his son, he tripped over the fallen body of his wife. In falling, his head struck the edge of the table. As he lay on the floor, there was a dull, hollow moan. Then nothing.
Mother, are you all right? He won't hurt us again.
Why must I see this? Why are you conjuring up these ghosts?
You've seen your share of the worst, Gravedigger. You've every right to be angry. But anger, it's a ticklish thing. It releases into the soul tremendous steam that can be used to drive a hammer or tap an egg. Some use anger's energy to rise above their wounds, if only to let their scourge know they're unbroken. But others are destroyed by it. The anger caused by a monster itself becomes a monster that drags them to self-destruction.
I've had enough of your mush.
So you have you? In that case, you need to see what is. Show him his present!
No, please!
Ben, is that you?
Yes, Mother.
You don't sound right. Is something wrong? Ben... You've been crying.
I was in a scrape, Mother.
With whom?
The sexton.
The sexton? Gabriel Grubb? What happened?
He hit me.
He hit you? But why?
I don't know. I'd seen him at the church earlier, and he were in a foul mood. But he's always in a foul mood. I was on my way home, singing, when I saw him coming towards me. Next thing I knows, he's beaten me. But Mother, I didn't do anything. Believe me, I didn't.
Oh, Ben, my poor boy. Does it still hurt?
More on the inside than outside.
I don't understand.
I earned a penny for sweeping out the church, and I used it to buy some plums. Ever since we lost Father, Christmas has been a bad time for you. I was hoping you'd see the plums and think to make some pudding, like you used to. And you'd be happy, if just for a while. But when Mr. Grubb hit me, I dropped the plums, and before he was finished, he knocked me on top of them. They're smashed. I'm so sorry, Mother. I was wanting to surprise you.
Oh, my sweet boy, you've wonderfully surprised me. Don't worry about the plums. But if that villain, Gabriel Grubb, ever touches you again, God help him.
The boy would be an impertinent.
No, he wasn't. When one like you is driven by hate, the smallest things assume major significance. Ben Britton's hair may need brushing, and his hands cleaning, and his clothes mending, but he's a harmless, warm-hearted, affectionate child who never did you wrong. He was a jostle, a bump, a brush in a snowstorm. Yet you took something as harmless as a sneeze and did to an innocent boy worse than your father did to you. What you did cries to heaven!
And what do you know about such things, Goblin? What do you know about having a father who'd have soon beat you than look at you? What do you know about the nightmare of seeing your father beat your mother's face to pulp? What do you know about the hell I's carried inside of me because of what I's been through? Tell me, Goblin, what do you know about any of this?
For the longest time, the Goblin didn't speak. Sometimes, wisdom manifests itself in silence.
What would I know? I know that given what you've endured in your past, it's not surprising you've become what you are. It was a blessing that your father died, but he left behind a terrible legacy, a tendency to evil that you inherited and over time developed.
I don't want to hear it.
The facts are undeniable, Gravedigger, but you still resist them, which means you must see the last page, the page of your passing.
No, no!
Show him!
The drawing on the last page was of Black Night, and a black hole that was an old abandoned house that reeked of damp and mold and filth. In front of the door stood two men bearing on their shoulders what looked like a body wrapped in burlap. As Grubb looked on, what happened before happened again. The picture became animated. The man in front carried a lantern and was talking.
"'Tis a cold Christmas Eve, eh, mate?"
"Aye, and I twern't be out, except for me wife screeching about having nothing decent for Christmas meal. What about the odds and ends I put in the cupboard, I ask? The muffins and crumpets I found behind the baker's. Scrape off the mold and they're good as new."
"What'd she say?"
"Not much. Just started flailing away with her skillet and said if and I didn't come up with something proper for Christmas meal, she'd knock me into next year. I was only here because I was in no hurry to get to next year."
"You let your woman squawk at you like that? You're an embarrassment to husbandry. You know it?"
"Maybe so, but it's too late to undo it now." "What the deuce? This place smells worse than stinking meat. Say, why is we bringing the body here anyway? Why aren't we taking it to the cemetery?"
"The deacon said they won't allow the scoundrel to be buried in holy ground. They's paying us to dispose of him on the cheap, and there's nothing cheaper I know of than this."
"What do you mean?"
I mean, we's leaving him for the rats. This place is crawling with them.
Rats!
I'll have his bones bit clean before we get home, and I've got a bag of cheese curds to sprinkle on the remains. Prime in the pump, you might say.
This is giving me the creeps. If you hadn't been late meeting up, we'd already be back home.
I meant to be earlier, but just as I was leaving, my woman tells me I ain't going nowhere till I'd plucked the squab for a pigeon pie we's having for Christmas dinner and pitted the cherries meant for the pudding.
You were late, because your woman made you stay in to pluck and pit.
That was. I wasn't about to light a fuse the night before Christmas. What kind of idiot do you take me for? Let's dump grub and clear out of here before the rats mistake us for dinner.
Grub? Did he say grub?
I believe he did, but let me check with the boys. What'd he say, boys?
Grub! 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 Grub.
That's what I thought they said, Gravedigger.
Hearing this, a sense of cold terror seized Gabriel Grubb as the ugliness he had become seeped into his soul.
So that's how I end. No mourners, no coffin, no preacher saying a good word over me. Just rats.
A good word? And what would that good word be, Gravedigger?
There ain't one. I understand, sir. Nothing more can be done for me.
Nothing be done? Who told you that?
You just showed me.
I showed you what shall be if you continue to anger your life away. But remember this, and remember it to the last. So long as there's life, there's hope.
Hope?
There's more mercy in heaven and on earth than you've dreamed of, Gravedigger. You're awfully unlovable, and many will think it is a good day when the world's rid of you. But if the sand caked to the bottom of your boots can be thrown into the fire to make a crystal through which the stars can be seen, there's hope, Gravedigger, even for you.
It was as if a thousand thunders had gone off inside Grub. For there is nothing in this world that outshines the brightness of hope. And suddenly, unexpectedly, incredibly, there it was. In what had seemed the darkest night, a faint ember now shone like a floodlight, and the prospect of hope brought Gabriel Grubb to his knees. Raising his clasped hands to the goblin, he said,
"Tell me, goblin, I beg you, how can I escape the rats and the end I deserve?"
"The answer to that is the easiest but the hardest thing I could ever tell you, Gravedigger. But here it is. You must love."
"Love? What do you mean?"
"I mean you must begin to live as if another's life is greater than your own. I mean you must show devotion and humiliation, submission to someone else, service to others, trust and belief, and sacrifice to those who favor you, wound you, or tear your heart to pieces. Love is a long, long road, but it alone can conquer the ghost that haunts you and free you from a past that holds you. It's a task and a trudge, but you can love, Gravedigger. I know you can."
For what seemed forever, Grub stood silent, with his head bowed.
"I's been ripped up this night."
"What's that?"
"I's never felt more shame than I has this night by thinking of what I am."
"Splendid!"
"You've taught me, sir."
"The dickens, you say. And just what is it I've taught you?"
"That I's been a bloody fool. For however many days are left me, I means to spend him unselfing meself."
Springing from his throne, the goblin removed his hat and with a flourish bowed to the sexton and said,
"Your servant, sir."
The cavern darkened. First the goblin, then the rest, stepped back into shadow and were gone. Gabriel Grubb, utterly spent, lay down on the ground and fell asleep.
I must have gotten too deep into the spirits last night and passed out. No, wait. Spirits? The book? Me father? The boy? The rats? I's been with the goblins!
After night comes morning, and with morning comes hope. Gabriel Grubb had never known a night so long, so short, or so significant, and he awoke an altered man. He was covered with snow. His flask still lay on the ground with his spade and lantern, and the grave was still half dug. Everything was as it had been, except there were no goblins to be seen.
The bell. Yes, the bell. It's Christmas! It's Christmas! And there's hope! There's hope. There's hope. There's hope. So long as I's alive, the goblin said, and I's alive. I am. There's hope.
Had you seen him, you would have thought Gabriel Grubb was seized by hysterics. He took no heed of anybody or anything. He ran about in the snow like a wee child. He scooped up handfuls of snow and threw it in the air, leaving him so covered with the frozen moisture that he began to resemble a snowman. He laughed and cried in the same breath. He was, at that moment, the embodiment of pure joy.
White, love. The goblin said I must love. Yes, I must.
And down the road to the village he rushed. Most malicious people are miserly, and Gabriel Grubb was no exception. For years he hoarded his pay for hoarding's sake. But now, with hope impelling him, his stinginess was being torn down by love. Excessive sorrow is proverbially selfish, and for all her goodness, Mrs. Britton's sorrow had made her selfish. But Ben's unshakable joy, his hope for her reclamation from sadness, touched her deeply. And in admiration of her son, she determined not to waste another moment grieving what she'd lost to the neglect of what she had. Though she and Ben had little more than each other, they had their voices, and they sang their joy.
Who could that be?
I don't know. I'll check. There's no one at the door, Mother.
But someone just knocked.
I know. Wait. There's something on the ground. A bag.
What's in it?
I don't know. Let me open.
Gold sovereigns? Silver crowns? Ben, someone's left a present at the wrong house.
There's a note. To Ben. Compliments of the goblins.
It wasn't a mistake. It was love. No one ever suspected this godsend came from Gabriel Grubb, for he was nowhere to be found. He knew he had stirred the enmity of nearly everyone in town, and the thought of remaining where his repentance would be doubted and his reformation disbelieved was more than he wanted to face. He understood life well enough to know that when a fire rages, the wise thing is to back away until it has burnt itself out. This he did. And in time, the hard feelings the village had for him died out, starved to death by his absence and the passing of time. With a knapsack stuffed with coins, he journeyed to where he was unknown, and there did all the good he could with as little fuss as possible. And in time, by constant, loving acts, Gabriel Grubb rose to a height beyond himself, and wonderful things happened. Late at night, poor people, struggling to pay their rent, facing eviction, would hear a knock. Upon answering, all they'd ever find was a small bag containing gold and silver coins and a note.
Compliments of the goblins?
What does that mean, dear?
Parents with a sick child, but without money for a doctor, had similar experiences.
Yes? No one's here. Just, wait, a bag with a note.
What does it say?
Compliments of the goblins.
As he promised in the goblin's cavern, he unselfed himself. Love so healed his soul that it began to grow young, even as he grew old. In time, the loveliest thing about Gabriel Grubb was Gabriel Grubb. And that, my friends, is the story of the goblins who stole the gravedigger.
Superb story, Wardle. Captivating. One worthy of this blessed night.
Except he didn't finish it.
What? There's more?
A bit, but I fear everyone has had enough of Grub and the goblins for one night.
Rubbish! Whatever is left, tell it!
All right. After Gabriel went missing, someone suggested, purely as a joke, that goblins had grabbed him. The jest hadn't passed through four sets of ears, however, before it became gossip that was soon elevated to the level of sacred truth. And on this, the new sexton, who had a touch of the charlatan about him, sought to capitalize.
Case of the missing sexton solved. Goblins pay a visit. We are not alone. See the proof for yourself. One bob.
One bob. Seems pricey.
Only to skinflints unconcerned about the fate of their former church official.
Concern for Gabriel Grubb? If you're counting on that to sell tickets, you'll go broke.
Well, if you don't want to hear about Grubb, what about the goblins? Surely you'd like to see the evidence that they were here.
I guess. But a bob.
Not a penny less.
Oh, all right. But if you're cheating me, I'll know it. Let's see what you got.
It's right here, under the table.
A broken piece of weather vane. That's your proof goblins were here?
Makes everything clear as day.
Does it?
Must I spell it out for you? Gabriel Grubb disappears. I find a piece of the church weather vane on the ground. Coincidence? I don't think so. Clearly, the goblins flew here on a winged horse, grabbed Grub, and as they flew off, the horse accidentally kicked off part of the vane.
You don't think the thunderstorm the other night had anything to do with the broken vane, do you?
Is everyone in this parish as slow on the uptake as you?
Can I have me bob back?
And now, I come to the final scene. 20 years or so after Grubb disappeared, an old man walked into town. As he shuffled through the streets, he looked around as though familiar with all he saw. At length, he went into a pub where were gathered some locals. After ordering a pint, he asked no one in particular if anyone knew a boy named Ben Britton.
Everyone knows Ben Britton. He's one of the best we got. Lost his father early and his mom not long ago.
How's he doing?
He's fine. Years ago, he came into some money, but he always shared what he had with those what had less. Freely gained, freely gived, he'd say.
Strange, though. Whenever he helps someone, he always says, compliments are the goblins.
He says that?
He does. Don't know why, never explained, but he says it.
The stranger smiled and rose to leave. On the counter, he left the only coin he had, a gold sovereign. Then he walked out into the gloaming, headed for a path called Coffin Lane. Up to the church graveyard he went, and there found a spot where he'd once spent a Christmas Eve. Stretching out on the ground, with nothing but the stars above and hope within, he fell asleep. Sometime during the night, Gabriel Grubb awoke and saw before him a brilliant golden staircase, which he climbed right into the sunrise.
keeping watch from behind a tombstone, was a curious-looking onlooker, wearing a sugarloaf hat. When he knew the gravedigger was gone, he removed his hat, made a deep bow, and in a whisper of a whisper said,
"Your servant, sir."
When Ben Britton heard an old man had been found dead in the cemetery, he sent word that he'd pay for the man to have a proper burial. Oh my, it's past midnight. I've slogged on for far too long.
It wasn't a slog, my good sir. And it wasn't too long. It was a great story, greatly told. Whenever a man breaks the grip of hate and turns to love, he covers himself with glory. But it is late, and time for us to retire. And on the strength of this good story, let us go home to our beds and dream cherished dreams. After all, it will be Christmas Day in the morning.
I saw three ships come sailing in on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. I saw three ships come sailing in on Christmas Day in the morning.
You have just heard the original presentation of The Goblins and the Gravedigger, being a retelling of Dickens' first Christmas tale, performed by the Prairie Theatrical Ensemble. Directing and voicing the part of Mr. Wardle, the narrator, was Rodney Woodworth. Andy Baylor played Gabriel Grubb. Pete Barrett was the Goblin. Dima Evans was Ben and young Gabriel Grubb. Matthew Green was Mr. Pickwick. The role of Mrs. Wardle was voiced by Lucinda Lawrence, who also served as assistant director and music director. Josie Evans was the small goblin. The Deacons and the Cockneys were played by Parker Evans and Jace Woodworth. Ben's mother was played by Colleen Bruton. Kevin Deptula was Grubb's father and the husbands. Jody Prosser-Muller voiced the roles of Grubb's mother and the housewives. Craig Kukowit was the new sexton and a pub patron. Todd Knabush played a goblin and a pub patron. And Jace Jameson was the villager and a goblin. Special appreciation goes to our script supervisor, Linda Evans, to Patricia Reynolds of Dundalk, Ireland, who initially proposed a radio play of the story, to the internationally renowned folk group, the Irish Rovers, for use of their recordings with their compliments, to Craig Duncan for his music, to Lucinda Lawrence for additional music, and to Linda Vaughn, organist. Kenny Chumley is the author and producer of this show. And I'm Roger Francisco, your announcer and studio engineer. God bless us, everyone.